Interesting things to talk about tonight. Let's first start with the beginning of the parsha. It's a whole new introduction, whole new preface. Vayirah Avraham lo Yitzchak el Yaakov el Shakai, u'shmi Hashem lo nodati lehem. So first of all, let me tell you about something you don't see, just as a side note, which is also important. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu pressing the reset button? It feels like it's kind of reset button type of feel. I'm introducing Moshe already knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Sneh. Moshe already asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu how to present Hashem to the people. Moshe already was informed about the Gula of Mitzrayim. All of a sudden HaKadosh Baruch Hu was pressing the reset. Vayirah Avraham lo Yitzchak v'kel Shakai. Ushmi Hashem lo nodati. Galif v'psukim v'gam hakim osi. And enough of all the bris. And I'll say see me. What's this new start? So the Medrash fills us in. This is really not the topic I wanted to talk about, but it's an important topic, is that in the end of Parsha Shmos, you may recall, Moshe's hooted out of the palace. Pyro is laughing at him. People are scorning him. The entire Egypt is lambasting him. We want to just, Eitan, we'll just close this for a minute. Not nice to have an opening Gemara. So Moshe's being hooted. Appreciates, please, now. Moshe's being hooted out of the palace. So the Medrash says that Moshe was so frustrated. This matters. You don't know this matters. He left Egypt for 3 months, and he flees to Midian. And according to some opinions, he doesn't leave Midian for 3 months. He leaves Midian for 6 months. 6 months, he's off the grid. 6 months, can't find Moshe Rabbeinu. Now imagine you're a Jew living in Egypt when Moshe Rabbeinu was hooted out of the palace, running back to his father-in-law. What are you calling him? What are you thinking to yourself? Flash in the pan. One and done. This is a false messiah. This is another guy who's trying to build up our hopes and talk about redeeming us and squaring off against Pyro, and the fight takes one round. And by the time one round's over, he's the laughing stock. And that's what you're telling yourself. And yet 6 months later, Moshe is back in the ring. And 6 months later, Hashem sends him back. Speaks to him again. He relaunches redemption. So there are two important messages here. One about history and one about personal experience. And of course, the two always shadow each other. In terms of history, we all think of Geula as this process that surges and surges and surges and surges uninterruptedly, maybe the pace is sometimes slow, but and what Parsha Shmos Vayera, the juncture, teaches us is look at the graph. Sometimes it can surge and surge and surge and dip. And surge and surge and dip and surge and surge and dip. Because it really dipped. Because if you're looking at the graph, when Moshe's not there, it's a dip. He's been embarrassed. The Jewish work has been redoubled. And you think redemption is finished. Eli, please, three sheets. You think it's finished. Redemption isn't always immediate. Redemption, Geula, isn't always uninterrupted. There could be pauses in the Geula. There could also be reversals in the Geula. Now, you're the post Aslo era. But let me tell you how painful it was for people who believe deeply in this redemption in Geula to go through the mid-90s and the late 90s and the early 2000s and 2005 in Aza. Because we all thought, what's Geula? 48, 67, lands, even 73, despite the fact that we were surprised, we recovered in the North Japan offensive. What does it mean when you're living through reversals, when you're giving back land? That's what's going backwards, isn't it? What does it mean when you're walking out of Aza? That's going backwards. What does it mean when, and a lot of people couldn't process that. And one manifestation was, should we still say in Shul Reishis Michas Gula Seinu? That's a lot of hot air. It's not a question of what you say in Shul. It's how you feel. You've put such investment and you're davening to Hashem and Hodol Hashem Kitov, but then all of a sudden you're giving back land. And this is really one of Rav Amital's major, major revolutions. It's not revolutionary, it's more conservative, is that he spoke to an entire generation that Geula doesn't have to be as meteoric and as radical and as overnight as you think. And he would always quote this Medrash. The Moshe comes with these brave new announcements. Rav Amital created a grounded messianism, because messianism could get very, very, very ambitious and very, very giddy and very euphoric. And then, of course, when those expectations are raised and then dashed, you have to deal with all the debris, the emotional debris and the national debris. So Rav Amital and Rav Aaron had very, very grounded, each in their own way. I'm not going to talk about Rav Chassin tonight, but one of Rav Amital's probably primary is that just because we're giving back land doesn't make it any less redemptive. And just because we're walking, it doesn't make it, because it happened in Mitzrayim, then it happens again, because Mitzrayim's the template. If you want to say it a little bit differently, remember last week's parsha, I'm just going back to last week's parsha, Moshe's befuddled, how will they trust me, how will they know? Hashem says, you don't gather the elders and say these two words. And when they hear these two words, they'll know that you're legit. And remember the two words that Moshe tells the Skenim? Pakod, Yifkod. Who told everyone, what does Rashi say? Who started this tradition of Pakod, Yifkod? Yaakov told Yosef, and Yosef, the last pasuk in Sefer Bereishis, Pakod, Yifkod, Elokim HaSen. What makes Pakod, Yifkod, Pakod, Pakadati so resonant? It's words. Why is this like, oh my goodness, he says Pakod, he must be real. Because as I'll say, it's a double pekida. And sometimes it takes double stages and double phases. And sometimes it happens terrifying. And sometimes, even in Mitzrayim, remember, Mitzrayim is presented as chipazon. This is the ultimate quick overnight gula. This is the very famous pasuk in Yeshaya, in Haftarah. Then the ultimate gula will not be bechipazon. It's not like Mitzrayim will be slow and gradual. Wait a second, Mitzrayim was also not as slow and gradual as this one, but so don't lose your patience and your appetite for gula just because of the pauses or lags or withdrawals. It's not meant to be that way. And sometimes when you think about gula, you think in such unrealistic terms that it can lead to a lot of suffering when those expectations aren't immediately met. That's why this is a new start. Va'erel Avram el Yitzchak v'el Yaakov v'kel Shaddai u'shmi Hashem lo nadati lehem. But what is Hashem telling Moshe? Well, why? Not just what. Somehow Moshe Rabbeinu was being zocha to a relationship that the Avos couldn't achieve. The Avos relationship was characterized by Shaddai. Va'erel Avram el Yitzchak v'el Yaakov v'kel Shaddai. But Yudkei Vavkei, they didn't merit. Now, there are two questions I'm not going to deal with tonight, but just make sure you realize they're there. First of all, what is the difference between Shakai and Yifkei? What does it mean to have a relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu based on Shakai, the Avos, as opposed to a relationship based on more, he just put the foot there, I'm trying to talk to Ellie. So what is the relationship of Yifkei Vavkei? Well, what's the difference between those two? Look at the Ramban, look at the Eben Ezra. The second question I'm not going to deal with tonight is, if you're looking gracious, Hashem appeared to the Avos with Yudkei Vavkei as well. So it's not as if they didn't Yudkei. It's true, if you're following, Shakai is very, very prominent in Sefer Bereishis. Then it almost disappears in the Torah. The only place in Tanakh that is also prominent is Eof. So it's an interesting resurfacing of Shin Dalet Yud and Eof. Bereishis, a lot, not so much like the rest of Tanakh. Eof, a resurgence. What does that say about Eof? That Eov is pivoted on Shin Dalet Yud. But the reverse is not true. Shakai fades after Bereishis. But Yudkei Vavkei doesn't make its debut in Parshas Vayera. Yudkei Vavkei is there in Bereishis. So it's not just what's the difference between the two, but it doesn't seem to be true. So at some level, the relationship with the Avos was more pivoted on Shakai than Yudkei Vavkei. Without, I don't want to get into the theological questions. What I do want to get into is whatever those two systems are, Shakai versus Yudkei Vavkei, why does Moshe get the bonus ticket? Why does Moshe get the business class then? Also, they almost have sat in economy class. You're getting upgraded. You're getting the Yudkei Vavkei. Moshe's not yet a frequent flyer. This is the beginning. Maybe in the end, you'd expect HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Har Sinai to award Moshe. You studied so hard. You understand so much about me. Maybe in the end of Sefer Devarim, now I'll introduce you to Yudkei Vavkei, Hodeinu Nastrechacha. Moshe's first starting out in the frequent flyer class. He doesn't have that many miles. Why is he getting to the front of the plane? What's happening? Why is he getting Yudkei Vavkei? The answer to that question is pretty obvious in the Pesukim, and it's really important in life, and that's why you're in this room. That's why I want you to appreciate why you're in this room. Why is Moshe Yudkei Vavkei? It's really easy. Because all the Avos, for all their accomplishments, and for all their achievements, and for all, they were the heads of families, masters of clans, leaders of tribes, Moshe now is a nation of 3.5 million people. With all that a nation challenges you to, day to day, pedestrian questions and dreary issues and people and livestock and families and relationships and people hitting. It's easy to run a family. You fight, you vent at each other, and then you sit down for some food, and you sit down for some dinner together. It's, families fight. Don't think that every healthy family life. Sometimes when you vent, it's even better to get it out rather than suppress it all the time until it erupts like a volcano. But nation's a whole different brand. People and relationships and confrontations and needs and failures and patterns. And Moshe has a nation now. And Moshe's career is going to be typified by selfless dedication to this nation. And at every point, it's going to be that dedication that surges his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the question in this yeshiva. When I say this yeshiva, I'm referring to his three yeshivas. How do you get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? For some people, and I'm sure maybe, I don't want to speak for a Haredi type of approach, but I'm sure many would feel this way, as many in our community would say, you have to walk away because the Hamon Am, the common folk, they're not at your level. They'll contaminate you. They'll dilute you. You need the ivory tower. Okay, you got to come out of the ivory tower every once in a while. You can't be snob. You can't be divorced in reality. But the real place is seclusion and insulation and separation because the nation is not going to augment that religious tone and that religious purity. And it seems that Moshe's career looks very different. That every time he dedicates to the people, then all of a sudden his relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu evolves. Now let's work our way not backwards, but let's not start at the beginning. Because Moshe's highlight is at Har Sinai. Remember, Har Sinai is not just about a mass revelation. Har Sinai is about Moshe Rabbeinu being spotlighted and walking into the Anan, and no one else can walk into the fire, and everyone else is frightened. Moshe Nigash El Harafel, and Hashem tells Moshe, I'm looking to see you walking straight into the fire so that they'll believe in you forever. Bavor Yishma'am V'Debrima, V'Gad B'Chayam V'Nol Mi'Olam. So Har Sinai is a dual frequency, is a dual event. It's the event of mass revelation, everyone heard Hashem. But it's also Moshe Rabbeinu transcending and surpassing. Well, how does Yisroel begin? Who knows how the parsha of Yisroel begins? Anyone have a mitzvah parsha of Yisroel or another parsha? What? All of a sudden Yisroel is here. Bar mitzvah?
Huh?
Bar mitzvah?
No, it is.
Okay. So Yisroel comes and Yisroel advises. All right, it's really, really boring way to start parsha's Matan Torah. How would you start the parsha? What would you call it? Sinai, Torah, Hori. It's called Yisroel and it begins with something different. Part of the reason is what Yisroel sees. What does Yisroel see? Vayashkim ha-boker, Vayimoram ha-Moshe min ha-boker, ha-ha-ra. Day, all day, night, Moshe Rabbeinu is just sitting there talking to people, helping them out, until he's worn out. Yisroel's terrified. You're going to worry yourself. You're going to burn out. The classic modern Orthodox fear. You're going to burn out. No, my goodness, the sun can't come back to the bed. You're going to burn out. You know my line. Sometimes you're so afraid of burning out, you never begin to burn. Burnout. I don't think anyone in our world, I don't think anyone in this room is in danger of burning out. You know who's in danger of burning out? Someone that had a very, very limited childhood and didn't read books and didn't have any exposure or learned shots when he was five. And put under, John Stuart Mill's burned out. He's speaking Latin when he was 40 years old. He's teaching Latin to his brother, a nervous breakdown. Because his father wrote him hard, and nothing around. Anyone in this room has played sports, watched a movie, had cell phones, had friends, should even pizza every once in a while. Your lives are not burnout candidates. You're not burnout candidates. No one here should be afraid. Maybe your parents, maybe 8 times. If any of the 3 should be. If any of your parents say, I'm afraid of burnout, send them my way. You're not candidates for burning out. People are candidates. 3 sheets, 8 times. Uno dos tres, 3 sheets, 30. Okay? The other people who are candidates for burnout are people that don't have the. Moshe's a candidate for burnout. What is he talking to these people about? Burnout hasn't been delivered yet. Like, what are they asking him? They're not asking him Higo Mapalagan, they're not asking Rabbi Bashar Shalom, they don't know it yet. They're thirsting for guidance. Rabbi Mikal's favorite stories that he tells in Parshas Yisroel, but I'll tell it to you now. About a Hasidic Rebbe, I like to embellish stories. I don't know what she said, I'm going to try embellish, but it's a great embellishment. Hasidic Rebbe's up all night, and one by one the Talmidim come in, and one Talmud says, Rebbe, Rebbe, was kein achton? What can I do? My vibe, that's this a refor shalema. She needs a refor shalema. So Rebbe says, oh, your wife needs a refor shalema. No problem. Shalom shnayas maseches ksuvos. It talks about being nishlo ishto. You should get some stuck. I say the problem with the pitlach of the hill. And your wife will have a refor shalema. It's now 1 o'clock. And the next chas comes in. Rebbe, echdarta parnasa. I need a parnasa. Rebbe says, the delta parnasa. Shalom Yisrael is about Mitzias and Mishnayos, let's get some stalker and learn these Kapitla Tehillah, and you'll have a part of it. Now, 2 o'clock. Rebbe, that's the Rebbe, I need the Rebbe. Rebbe, my tachter, Hatne Hatzinish Kin Shidduch, my daughter has no Shidduch, she needs that. I can't marry her off. He says, my tachter, that's the Hashidduch, learn Mishnayos, Mishachas Kedushin, say some Tehillah, give some stalker, she'll have a Shidduch. It's now 3 in the morning, the Rebbe's all dreary eyed. He's exhausted. He's been up since 6 in the morning. And let's go home. Turns to Shabbat and say, let's close up Shabbat. Last chassid come through. They're walking home in the snowy little shtetl. All of a sudden, this chassid comes running down the street and says, Ichdarf the Rebbe Eichet. I need the Rebbe also. Ichdarf the Rebbe Eichet. So the rabbi says, Rebbe's all around Shlofen. Get this out back. Rebbe's gone to sleep. Get out of here. In nice language. You know. Today, you hear a lot of interesting work. Get out of here. Rabbi Shoy. What? WTF? Rabbi's going schlafen. Ech darf the Rebbe. The Rebbe says, Lazakon, let him come, Lazakon. The Chazit says, Rebbe, Vaske Nachton. My cow has such a splitting headache. I just can't help her out. All day long she's mooing and cowing and flexing and complaining about her headache. What am I going to do with the cow's headache? He's not well shaken about trying to tell us. So kind of go down to the DVM. So it's a dory, a cow, it's a headache. It's a really big problem. This is how we're going to solve it. Shalom said Mishnayos. What Mishnayos did you learn? That's para. Thank you. All right, good one. Give some Tehillim, say some Tehillim, give some stock on your cow for sure. Okay? That's a good one. We're off to give some para. And the guy who says the challenge is red. Hashtays a fish. Unless. Mela, the woman, the Mela, the daughter, the Mela, the Parnassa, he has nothing better to do at 3 in the morning and deal with his chassid, his hashlof in the cow, hashlof in the headache. And then he says, you understand something. He didn't want to talk about the cow. He just wanted to talk to me. He just wanted to be with me. Not a cow, that was a pretense. Who cares about the cow? It's so important in life, at least in that one, we always have the time to tell people who want you. But they don't know how to ask for you. Really important to have an EQ in life. Kids, spouses, friends, parents. Sometimes people want you, but it's hard to say, I want you. Open this good time, I need you. So I'll say, the Rebbe, should I scratch my nose this way or scratch my nose? None of that scratching the job. It was just, you want to contact. People want contact. You don't know what people want to contact. You can find the time to people in contact. That's what we're asking the same thing. You're going to have to make a major life-altering decision. Not in the immediate sense, but a couple of years you get college, you get great degrees, and one day it's going to have shiny degrees, and you come right after the year, and they won't like some Shiva guys, and they don't get sugared up, and they don't steal money, and they don't hang out with the sex ed. So they're going to want you. They're going to sign here. Look at this line. Sign here. Okay? You get this many zeros of hours, and we'll triple the zeros in the end of the salary per hour. Every zero you add to an hour, every digit you add to the hour, you know, all of a sudden the zeros start tabling. And you think, wow, my ticket to happiness, the X is zero there. It is so, not to say the money that some people want it, but just think before you think about which people you're working with, what the management is like, or some people look at the management of the company, some tell you not Jesus. Look at the management, what types of people are there, are they exploitative, are they kind, are they respectful? Because if you're in a law firm that exploits clients, there's an exploitative culture, and you're not far beyond, you're going to either be an exploiter or an exploitative, or both. You know, respect other people, respect dignity, respect other people's lives. You don't want to be an exploitative machinery because you're going to end up getting chewed out. And it's going to put pressure on you over time. When people like respect your family and say, okay, this is a family, your parent is ill, your wife just had a heart delivery, take a week. Like, your family's important to us. You really got to hone in not just how many hours you have for learning and davening and not just how many hours you have for family, but check the culture. Check the people. Check if they react to one another. Check if they're respectful people. Check if families are valued. And You're not going to die. No one in this room is going to, I promise you, they're not going to collect money for your coffin. No one's heading in that direction. You're all going to have enough money to live your life by then. You want more, you want less. That's right. But no one's going to go hungry. No one's ever going to be sitting in the outside of Ronald Lake collecting next to bread rolls. You want to be representing gainfully employed. You want family. Again, so you more so of your life. And I don't take this literally. I don't generalize. It keeps coming asking whether you should go to the cleanup. Honestly, one of the first things I assess is the family wealth. They don't have the system to say what they're concerned. I'm just saying, if your family is more or less comfortable, then you have the leeway and the comfort to be able to subject yourself. If your company is less comfortable, the family, then you may not be able to divorce, family, separate. I don't give one fit all, one size fits all. You have to see where you're coming from, what your family is like. So Moshe Rabbeinu was at the Sisha. All day long, what are they coming and asking you? Why are they cows? What are you asking them this one? It's not Zeus, it's not the seals. Crosses above bosses. They're asking about their cow's headache or their snake's headache or their pet cattle's foot ache or something. And Moshe knows they just want his presence. They just want to know he's good. So much of life is you're being there. You need to be able to say anything. You're there at night with your kids, you don't say anything, you just know you're there. They just want to feel that confidence. These are very frightened people. A couple of weeks after the CS was night. They don't know what's happening. They just beat the Egyptians, they're eating mud, they're about to bark through a mountain. They don't know what. People are coming to visit them. They feel a presence. You get this question a lot because now it's the heat of the mission season, and people visiting and going. And like, I get these questions a lot. Tell me about the Rebbe Talmud relationships in the Yeshiva. So again, the honesty is the best policy. I try to be honest even if I weren't the best policy. But I think it's the best policy. Whatever you say, it's going to fact check you. And they go to be honest with them, being straightforward with them. I'd say it's Svei Dina. So first of all, it teaches them Svei Dina. What's Svei Dina? Okay, you don't belong in Russia. Svei Dina. What is Svei Dina? I say, make a chilek between FaceTime and elbow time. What's the difference between FaceTime? She wore braids and elbows. She was a barn with really sharp elbows. He's like for all the early 80s. That's the only part of her on this. Like a king in 83, stop playing ball. But the legend is he had sharp elbows. So that's that. So, Rivard doesn't elbow. I really elbow the guys. What do you mean is the size? If you're looking for Yeshiva, you're going to sit on a daily basis with Rebbeinu, fleshing out your life, fleshing out your belief system. Having conversations about where you're headed, we're not looking at that. It's not in our DNA. It's not what's happening. We're learning Gemara, Tanakh, Halacha, Bishalim. You need a different place. You need a place where there's a high Talmud Rebbe or Rebbe Talmud, Rebbe Talmud ratio. You need a place where you're going to sit with you on a daily basis and hash these things out. But I think that Rebbeinu here is just present a lot, just around a lot. Shabbos and Yom Tov and davening in the way you know, back in time here, but most. As far as I know, Goshen Leva Tara, the most non-community yeshivas, goes to Rebbeinu and staff are clustered around the yeshiva. So it's just, I'm around a lot. And with Shabbos, and we remember in Shabbos or now Shabbos, or the Rebbe's are coming for Shabbos, the Rebbe's are not coming for Shabbos. We're just here. And presence, I think, goes a lot. I sometimes ask high school kids when they ask me this question, they say, who did you grow from in high school the most? Like, which two Rebbeinu did you grow from the most? And I'll say this one, that one, that one. And they say, well, how did you grow from that? Because of long conversations you had with them about life. If so, then you really would want that, and you should try to find the yeshiva where you can have that more frequently. But if you feel that your kesher with Rabbi so-and-so, or Rabbi so-and-so, or Mr. so-and-so, whoever teaches them or inspired by, was less about how much they spoke to you and with you, and more about just watching them as role models and learning from them and growing from them, then I think this will more or less recreate that in some ways that more than other yeshivas because of the dosage and volume of time. So there's a lot of presence matters, not just the speech and the conversation and the fancy words, it's just present, just being around. And Moshe just is very present. He's with the people, and I don't think he's got any great answers to give them, but he's just present. And then what happens? Because Moshe is so dedicated, in a way that's self-annihilating. That's Yisrael's story. You're going to annihilate yourself. You're going to fade. You're going to wilt. What happens in the end of Parshas Yisrael? Moshe sends them out. And Moshe sees a Kodesh Baruch. Because for Moshe, it's always true that the more dedicated you are to Am Yisrael, the closer you are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not the inverse. not the more distant you are from Am Yisrael, the more protected and insulated and pure you are, but part of your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Here's the thesis of tonight's year. This is not just a reward, it's a reality. It's not just Hashem punches Moshe's ticket. Oh, you showed me a lot. You're really dedicated to my people. Let me punch your ticket and get you into the lower section. I'll give you a box seat because you deserve it. Let me upgrade you. It's not a reward, it's a reality. Part of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Part of my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I love you. I want to love you. I love your land. I love your Torah. And you know what? I really love your people. I really want to feel close to your people like that. I really love and be dedicated to people. I want to be devoted to people. And in some ways, it's easier to love people than to love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, because we're all people and we know each other. We share emotions. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is unknowable and distant. So in some ways, Abbas Yisrael is not, you're such Abbas Yisrael. Thank you, all of a sudden appear to you in a dream. You're such a great, oh Yisrael, you deserve more of me. That is more. It is more of a great part. And that's what I talked about in Smart a little bit. You can't just sit there, and I wasn't planning on going off the rails, but it's just a really important thing. But you sit out there, hear that, it has to be both with humility and with a sense of shared enterprise, and we're all people. And you know what I didn't mention? I really feel bad about this, and just it's a last minute thing. You know what the Vilna Gaon of Abbas Yisrael is? He's sitting in this day's Medrash. The Vilna Gaon of Abbas Yisrael is Rabbi Ryan. Get to know him. The love he feels for Jews and the association, any person that walks in, and it cuts across ideologies, cuts across location, cuts across language. And we'll go to Rabbi Ryan, like an inside joke to just say, oh, you look really happy today. Must have been your funeral. It's like, we'll just go to funerals. We'll just look up a funeral and the funeral register in God. So you're not that extreme. But if you knew the person's great grandmother's second cousin was there, we'll go. It'll travel for an hour just to show up. And he is such an Abbas Yisrael. And I think that sometimes when you're very ideological, this is our way and my way and this derech and that derech, and it can become a little bit divisive. And they're not our derech. They don't know. They'll stick with Dipper, Tell Chanter, Gargoyle, where it has to be okay. We're all fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu together. And we all love each other deeply. And we're all suffering together through this goal. So we'll try to bring about that change. And okay, we're different. You gotta gather yourself. You can't just smell the differences and eliminate who you are. And that's the end from the position of Abbas. So that's the message of there. Motion now. That's basically itself. And now's the big main event. The little families and clans and shelter and tribes, they've got an entire 3 million team of strong people out there. And you're going to show us how dedicated. What happens in Kitisa, the next moment that Moshe leaps forward? Remember, Kitisa was not just Moshe being spotlighted at this massive revelation. Kitisa, no one pulls up the man. No one's even close to the man. It's this private interview between Hashem and Moshe. Moshe says, "On the Eninos, Terechecha, Harininos, Kivodecha." Hashem says, "V'santicha v'nikur tzatzur, I'll cover my hand, as a prosius kapi, v'reisa zachari." My goodness, talk about fear. Don't tell the Christians about these stuff. You will see my back? That's crazy. That's heresy talk. Talk about Hashem that way. That's how close it was. Get in front of the lawyer row, but the back of Hashem, and where Brachas is still in the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we know it's all metaphoric, but this is heavy stuff. When does Moshe get that? How does Moshe get that level? Well, the answer is in Kitisa. What happens immediately before? I mean, Moshe looked and said, alluded to it, and then Shal Shiris. What happens in Kitisa right before that moment? Shem tells Moshe, I've had it with those Jews. They're obstinate. They're recalcitrant. You know what? I'm going to obliterate them. I'm going to annihilate them, and I'll make a new people. I'll start with you. You're going to be George Washington. Apologies to the Brits. George Washington. You tell me I'm going to be George Washington. You don't mind. Where do I sign? Just give me the contract. I'm going to be on dollar bills, not Rushmore. But my birthday is going to be set. Look, it's all in package. I'm ready. I'm there. What did Moshe say? Me and them. They don't come, I'm not in. I'm with them. Take me, you gotta take them also. And my in the chayyab is sitting question yourself. You don't want them, I don't come. They come in packets here. Go take my posse. 3 million, throw a posse with me. My entourage. 3 million. My entourage. Your son's doing the Shemayim? That's exactly what I said. Very test question. It's a trick question. You test it. Trick question. I should think some more trick. I've got to think of trick questions before the interview. I was like a trick question. So maybe I'll say like Edward Howard, I think, used to have trick questions. He would interview four or five guys together and like play them off. So it's not a new one. So like, not more you think about what I just said. You know, go ahead and hear some rope. You know, the tarot. Okay, you get some rejection. He didn't mean it that way, but it ended up being like, you know. That's been smart. So like, maybe I should do that. Like, Ellie Griffin, take a couple guys into a room and say, you can see where you feel. We got three spaces here. Go get them. You know, hang them up and see who's able to get the spaces. Turn it around. You know, today your reason becomes so soft pedal and nice and very nice things about you. See, we'll flip the script. Okay, three places, six guys in the room. I'm coming back in 10 minutes. There's no blood on the floor. You're all out. You know, don't think rejected or something. Anyway, getting back to the reality. Okay, so that's Moshe, that's his art. And it starts in this week's parsha. Why? Because it's not to belabor the point, but what's the one point that Moshe's relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu dips and he can't convert himself, he's punished, and he's retired? It's the same arc, it's the same reality. At the rock, it's not about hitting versus talking, it's not about. What's it about? What does he say? Don't remember the language. The precious Kukas. What does he say? Shimuna. He says, look at this plastic. Shimuna Hamorim. Amin Hasel Azer Matsila Hamayim. Morim is not a nice way to speak. It can mean rebels. It can mean recalcitrant. It's just not a way to speak to your people. And the Medrash that I didn't quote, he says, oh, that's the way you speak to Amisrael. You call them Morim. You call them rebels, outcasts, fugitives. So tonight's about Ahavas Yisrael and about dedication to Ahavas Yisrael. And you'll find different ways to be dedicated. I met someone yesterday, he probably listened to the show, he's not going to mention his name. He's so dedicated. What's a dedicated like? He's an adult. He's been on the board of his children's local day school, I think, in New York for forever. When I say he's been on the board, I mean like really, really good. I don't think just show up at board meetings and drink coffee and ask him about it. I mean, he'll miss it. He worries about it. He can't ask my advice about certain things. He shared his frustrations. He only get follow-up. He's like, this guy lives it. People live schools, live shuls, live community needs, live chesed. I mean, live. I would almost say, if you're not living in Israel, living in Israel is a whole different equation. But I would say, if you decide to pitch your tent in Teaneck or the Five Towns or whatever, there has to be. There are ways around it, but there has to be an institution that you live in. And you tore your copy of office. School, high school, middle school, it has to be. I think some people are able to be dedicated to themselves through non-institutional means, it's like, I don't know, visiting some people all the way. But in most cases, large Jewish communities, institutions create services. Institutions are run by people who insert themselves in the institution at the sacrifice of their time and their football watching and their relaxation. It was just 24. They live. And some of you have seen them in your parents. And some of you have seen them in your parents' friends. That's what you have to do. And it has to be at both levels. It has to be time dedication and also emotional. I mean, some people, they're very, very dedicated to institution, but their institution, the second that a husband walks in and says, like, oh, we're around yourself, we're about our people. The other thing I really wanted to talk about in a little bit that we haven't done with some Shabbos inside, but that's really going to talk in a few seconds just to make you honest. There was a lot of pain in America when I was there, because I landed 2-3 days after the shooting in Patterson, or in Patterson City?
Jersey City.
After the shooting, and somehow that didn't elicit the type of attention and camaraderie and support some of the other shootings, such as Pittsburgh and San Diego, had elicited. And the talk was, this is what people were saying, was because of Hasidim. And a lot of non-Hasidic Jews had a harder time identifying and sympathizing. But it's so heartbreaking to know. 1 million years of that being issued. And I was very proud of some of my father that I know, who just made the trip to Peshiva to be Mishra Maleo, if you really don't know. That's the right thing to do, to show their communities that. Not that we're all one. We're all one suggests that we're different and we're more different, but I mean different. It's just, you're therapy, at least there's stuff. There has to be a sense of identification and love and care and us, and rather than this alienation we don't. And I hope we're trying to live out in the yeshiva. This yeshiva, we're playing with a little bit of a handicap. It's a good handicap to play with, but it's playing a little shorthand. And what I mean is, all the rabbeim here learn from Gersh. And that means that your derech hashkafa is really consistent. You can't underestimate, you can't overestimate how important that is. A lot of kids feel a little this, a little that, a little that, a little, it just doesn't, you don't have any process, any view, it's just a lot of ideas. You can work it out as life goes on, but it's not like giving a ground level, how do you view life, and you have process issues. And similarly in derech halimut. Derech halimut, you can't overestimate how important consistency is. It's not, again, it's just like this fool's goal as far as I want to learn. With this memory for 2 months, and that, it makes me so I said repulsive, it's just so silly, it's just a stupid stuff. That's not the way to become a Talmud Chacham. Become a Talmud Chacham, you take 5-6 years and you study Talmud the same way. There's no other way out. I promise you. It can be a million different ways. You want to do a different direction, that's your prerogative. But you can't dip here, it just doesn't work. I don't want anyone to become a Talmud Chacham. But the handicap is we're a little bit too monotonic here. It's a good handicap. You can't have both. If we had a yeshiva with a lot of diversity, then what we're going to talk about right now would be much less powerful, much less compelling. But we're trying really hard to show you, and not just in an artificial way, but just, okay, we may not have that many of them from creating the world. And that is a very powerful message. You do it with Sashkapa. But we believe enough to raise our children and educate our children that way. It's not just left on the street or send our kids to I said, like, it's not just by teaching English because, not really, but it's not really, but we really believe in this. But when the Lubyansky comes in, it's just the world. It's not such a great idea. We're all the same. There's no space between us. We don't even feel it. At 2:30 today, the Rebbe's met with the Lubyansky in a side room. We're asking him about education and stuff. We're really eager to hear from you. You gotta break that. You gotta break it down. It's so destructive and so inhibiting. Okay, so that's first part of tonight's whole conversation. Second part of tonight's whole conversation. Talking about something new tonight. Normally, I think about a lot of ideas every year. I think it's really crucial to be the bedrock of human identity. But something a little bit different. It's also the bedrock of human identity. Michal Avot Hashomehen. How do you become a Paro? As far as a tragic figure, and Paro spirals in free fall, Paro gets all this emotional or moral quagmire. And what checks and balances in your life can you set up to prevent this moral free fall? It's called checks and balances. Look at it. This is not necessarily morally corrosive, but if this happens, then we'll lead to something morally corrosive. So, how do you become the person that, okay, I'm so far from Paro that I do the right thing at all the time, and if I ever fall down? State. Let's talk about two or three issues tonight. Let's take a look at sheet number two. Let's talk about three traits of power. Vayakam Malach HaLash HaMitzrayim Shalai Adas Yosef. So it's Machlokes. You don't know the Machlokes. Was it a new king or was it an old king? So it was a new king. It's obvious. It's an old king. It's no Yosef. So the member says, "Nabi Dami Glo Yadu Yosef Klal." He may believe he didn't. Yosef. There's actually a fascinating backstory, which has another angle, a slight angle. Look at the Gemara. Look at the member source number 3 days. Sha'amru Hamitzrim Lepara. Line number two. The end of the line. Bob is Dami Glo Muzu. Let's annihilate the Jews. Let's conspire against them. Amru Lemzo Paro Nishol Kikach. Shalti Matan. You idiots, why are you trying to discriminate against the Jews? They fed us, they rescued us. They catapulted us to their international prestige. Egypt became a superpower because of Yosef, because of the famine years, they supported the entire world. And now you want to discriminate against the Jews? You want to anti-Semitism? I mean, you're silly. Line number four, if you lay Yosef, lay Yuchayim. Not Yosef, you wouldn't be here. What happened? He fights and they depose him. Kibon Shalosh Amalahem, he didn't agree to the original conspiracy. How are you doing? He kisses our Shalosh Amalahem. He's actually impeached. He's impeached for 3 months. Until he says, you know what? can't do any Jordan, because you know what I'm doing. Get back on the throne. So Pierce was a little angry about people not really caring much about their ideals, caring more about their titles, and please never go down that route. Because don't ever sacrifice your values for a promotion or for a title or for... That's not a good way to go. It's not a good way to roll in life. Values last, promotions come and go. When the promotions fade and the positions fade, you're left without anything. No position, no prestige, no values. Values is the bedrock. Values. Who are you? What do you stand for? What do you represent? Go down with the ship. Stick to your guns. You've got values, stay there. You can compromise your values to collaborate with other people. It's called compromise. It's called collaboration. These are my values. These are your values. We have to work together, right? Ellie and I have really different values. We have to compromise every day. Not just decent, right? But with people, you have to make compromises. So don't advocate them just to get to the next promotion, get to the next level. But anyway, the people. Paro, they just forget what Yosef was. Amar Avin, Mashal Le'echad, Shiragam Ovo Shamelech. He notices someone is basically stoning, at the end of the story of the day, stoning the king's viceroy or something. Amar Melech, Yitizimus Rosha, kill that person who killed my associate. Kibamach Yasab Bikath, as if he's violent towards my associate, he's violent to me. Lekach Kasav Al-Mikra, Shalayah Lis Yosef. If Paro forgets Yosef, is he going to forget tomorrow? Hashem. What does that mean? Because how can you forget Yosef's rescue and support and plans and dedication? That's called Makar Satel. And if you forget Yosef and you're not able to be Makar Satel to Yosef, then it's not too far away to forget a finished plan. So Paro's first flaw was the inability to makritov. The ability to recognize, to appreciate, to acknowledge. Rabbeinu Bachi Ibn Bakudin is very famous saying, Chavos Almos. I'm not sure that everyone would agree with this, but that's not important. But this is the primary trait of a modern gen is Hakarasatov, it's an important gen. I'm not sure that it should be the pivot of everything, but whatever. This isn't a meat element here. What's gold medal, meat medal, silk medal, whatever. It's a really important thing. Why is it so hard to be Makir Tov? Typically for two reasons. Sometimes it's hard to be Makir Tov because you have too much of it. And you just lose the ability to just appreciate. That's called entitlement. So you have too many things. You just think things are coming to you. So if you live in a very resourced Jewish community with a lot of restaurants and shuls and schools, anyone know places like that? A lot of well... If you've been raised getting everything you want, it's really hard to be appreciative. It just comes and comes and comes. Yeah. I think in this yeshiva, it's hard to be appreciative because the trains really run all the time well. If you go to smaller yeshiva, I don't mean American, I mean Yerushalayim and Malay, it's much more student run. If you go to the kitchen all the time and work and a lot more is on the student shoulders. Again, you can't have that yeshiva here because this is just too large, too many. Yeah, 1,800 people having on Sunday for Ritzai, okay, who wants to go to the kitchen? That's just it. It's a different structure. But I think part of the greatness of this yeshiva is that it runs on time and the food is served, that it's hot and it's comfortable and you don't have to worry. But I think sometimes you think things are coming to you, that the expectations, and it's really important that I just don't feel that you deserve anything in life. Try as best as you can to start from that. I have nothing coming to me. I was born without clothing, and I'm going to be buried without clothing, and everything I have to be taken from me, and everything I have to receive from people, from my Kodesh Baruch Hu, I don't just try to eliminate that word deserve. Deserve is a really bad root for human experience. There's anger, frustration, hostility. Why did I get my dessert? It's just try to be gracious and grateful to people. Another reason that it's hard to be Makir Tov is it's hard for people to eat because when you're Makir Tov, you really are being Makir need. I have needs. And thank you for serving my needs. But we'd rather believe that we're invincible and self-sufficient. We'd rather believe that we don't need people. Joseph Stalin, not exactly the greatest 20th century moralist, once said that obedience is a sickness suffered by dogs. Okay, if you want to follow Joseph Stalin's and Zilzishar, then maybe you should be grateful. Okay. I'm sorry, I say obedience, and then gratitude is the sickness suffered by dogs. Joseph suffered. Gratitude is the sickness suffered by dogs. Joseph is very grateful. So if you want to follow in the footsteps of Joseph Stalin and be the single greatest mass murderer of the 20th century, here's the start. If you want to be the anti-Stalin, then gratitude, watch to be grateful. Grateful makes me subservient, makes me obedient, makes me sensitive to other people. It's about moral conscience, living with conscience. Living with conscience, it may exact a price, you don't just do whatever you want, but it creates a moral sensitivity, a moral awareness. It connects you to people, connects you to responsibilities. People without conscience are psychopathic. They have no conscience, do whatever they want. And you think it's a better way or not. People think it's a better way to live, but it's no guilty standing, but there's also nothing binding you to anything or any system or people. And at a certain point, your life is meaning and empty. That's the biggest nightmare. So the first fall of power is a curse of God. Moshe Rabbeinu is the antithesis of power. We just twice in this parsha, he's makir tov to inanimate objects. Who is he makir tov to? The Nile River. How is he makir tov to the Nile River? What does Rashi say? He doesn't strike it. The first time. It's the Nile River. It's water. What does it mean to have gratitude for water? Because the water is safer than Shmos. And what's the second object in Egypt that Moshe's makir tov to? Sand. It doesn't execute Canaan because the sand covered up the dead Egyptian body. This is preposterous. What, the sand's going to be insulted if Moshe is old and violent? And what is it? I don't know. What was that? The answer is Hakaras HaTov is not important only because the person that delivers you want to show that person's gratitude. It's reflexive, it's good moral behavior. Not about the person, it's about you. You're not Machu Tov. You take things for granted. You take things for granted. You have a split head. You have a self center. You have to be Machu Tov. I wouldn't be here without water and sleep. I'm not everything I'm cracked up to be. I'm not Moshe Rabbeinu. If life had been a little bit differently, I'd be in jail without the sand to cover up the dead body. If life had been differently, I'd be in some crocodile's small intestine right now because the world was sacred. So Moshe Rabbeinu is able to get over his own invincibility. It's better to lead life without thinking you're invincible. What are the secrets of marriage? Listen to Nigush guys. This is where a lot of Gush guys don't always get it immediately. My cousin talked with Gush guys, talks a lot. And you try to be self-sufficient, you're bugging individualism, take care of myself, I don't need anyone to help me. That whole American, South African, ego, aggressive. Don't be needy, don't complain, we don't like needy people, needy. You know what marriage is about? They're having a lot of needs. And having your spouse fill those needs. What do you mean? I should just be the strong, silent type that doesn't need anything. I'm the prince. You know what it feels to be married to someone you're not giving anything to? Pretty funny. Part of validation and affirmation is to know that you're making someone's life. It's to know that without you, that person's life will be the silent darker. That's feeling good about yourself. It's called self-esteem. Not the artificial self-esteem you try to get from people liking you or popularity or fame. It's called self-esteem real. So I feel good because I help my wife every single day. And without my help, her life would be in vice versa. And just guys don't always get that. What do you mean? I'm a strong, silent. I don't need anything. Right, I don't take care of myself. It's what you mean, guy. Good prayer, Pastor. I see some of your minds start to work. I work against the most lovely Chicago. I think it's an extra piece of shit. So I'm like, first. Hey, sir. It's a scratch. Your words aren't great because you do it with Shema. This is the secular, you know. Costumes are Shema. But anyway, getting back to reality, okay? That's how you lead your life. You're a person in need. Just take a second. Let's just mental experiment. How many people have sacrificed how many hours for your well-being to this point in life? Just think about the roster of people, parents and teachers and friends. Just who did it take to get you to this stage? It runs so smoothly that you think, oh, it's all so obvious, but it's not true. As they got refusal, one of the Gedolim from Europe, who actually fought in partisan, was a very interesting figure. And when he started his yeshiva in Yerushalayim and survived the war, There's these yeshivas and Ramban and Eben Ezra students still there. It's called Masach Yisrael. I learned it in grace. He would personally water the plants. And they said, Rashi, why are you watering the plants? Well, the ground never watered the plants. I watered the bushes. He says, I might be thrown to the bushes for concealing me when I was fighting the Persians. Well, what are you saying? One of those bushes in some polished flowers? This is plants in future life. But what about the bushes? It was about his recognizing his rescue and admitting that he was a bad hit. One of the trick that's really important and we'll end is a really sad scene. Pasuk, where is it here? Pasuk, it's on the last page. You should confront Paro, so remember Bob, we warned you, we stopped over Kurso, I'll tell you all, I'm going to not mention the Papa, the Hashi got here, the Papa. So why is Moshe confronting Paro when they're not in the morning? So, we're talking about the marriage for all number of other reasons, but just because the marriage is so well known, because Paro wanted to pretending doesn't have to use the little Paro's room. So, before anyone was watching, there's the little Paro's room in denial, so you don't deny your humanity. Show people you're a human being. Don't try to be something you're not. Such a sad thing, you imagine opening it. We have a big meeting. It's laughable. Okay, that, this is a caricature, but sometimes I'm just afraid to show people what you're doing and we have limitations. And think about the people you really connect with in life. They're generally people that are authentic. People that you sense this is the real thing. It's not, you know, just giving me some garbage story like a real person. How do you sense authenticity? People just aren't, they don't have to be maybe the father. I pretty much am just like, right, pajamas. Well, I'm in person, I have pajamas. And would you go through? I go through it. I don't have to feel like, oh, I can't, not display it. I'm in my pajamas, but I don't feel enough to hold any. Obviously, the things will hold back in private world, in private relationships, but things that are private in nature. Again, it's not part of the cheer, but if it comes up in conversation, try to be real, try to be human, try to not divorce yourself. It's like when you get older in positions, you want to feel that you're different from other people. It's so important. Relationships are built on authenticity and trust. And you build authenticity and trust by not holding back when you are in a line of connected. And people connect when you sense that we're just like me, just rather than someone pretending to be someone you're not. And this is a portrait of power trick, something he's not in a ridiculous fashion. Yeah, but this is just an extreme version of what we all go through every day. People don't show us that they're just really regular human beings like you and me. And those are people's humility, and these are the checks and balances that will check you before you fall to a power state. You don't become a power through these, but if you check yourself at these levels, you don't fall into the space of power. That can become a mass murderer, but be authentic. Don't be humble. Don't deny your humanity. Be Makir Tov. That's the way to live life. You're looking for 3 or 4 ingredients to live life. Don't be entitled. Be grateful to people. Accept your weaknesses. Be gracious about other people's weaknesses. Be authentic with people. These are the ways that you'll just be a homespun, good, healthy person. And all this rotten stuff won't start to corrode who you are. Okay, let's talk about that.